6. For the moment, however, I did not have to deal with Hitler's Reich, but with the Revolution of 1918 and the German Republic. The effect of the Revolution on me and my contemporaries was exactly the reverse of that of the war. The war had left our actual everyday lives unaltered, often to the point of boredom, while it supplied an inexhaustible fund of raw material for our imaginations. The Revolution brought many changes to our daily lives, and the novelty was vivid and exciting enough, I shall soon be going into that, yet it failed to engage our imaginations. Unlike the war, it did not provide a simple, plausible narrative to explain events. Its crises, strikes, gunfights, coups, and demonstrations remained contradictory and confusing. It never became clear what was going on. We felt no enthusiasm for it. We did not even understand it. The Revolution of 1918 was not planned or premeditated. It was a byproduct of the military collapse. Feeling betrayed by their military and political leaders, the people themselves, there was virtually no leadership, chased them away. Rather, they shooed them away. At the first threatening, alarming gesture, all those in authority, from the Kaiser downward, disappeared without a squeak and without a trace, just as the leaders of the Republic disappeared in 1932-33. German politicians, from the right to the left, have no skill in the art of losing. Power lay in the streets. Among those who seized it, there were very few true revolutionaries, and even they seem, in retrospect, to have had no clear conception of what they wanted and how they were going to get it. It was not just bad luck, but a sign of lack of talent, that they were almost all disposed of within 6 months. Most of the leaders were embarrassed, respectable men, grown old and comfortable in the habit of loyal opposition, quite overcome to find power suddenly thrust into their hands, and eager to be rid of it as soon as decently possible. Among them there were a number of saboteurs who were resolved to tame the revolution, that is to say, betray it. The most notorious of these was the monstrous Noske. Footnote: Gustav Noske, a leading social democrat, was responsible for organizing the Free Corps to fight against the revolution in 1918-19. He was Minister of Defense at the time of the Kapp Putsch in 1920. The game was soon underway. While the real revolutionaries attempted a number of badly organized and amateurish coups, the saboteurs organized the counter-revolution with the help of the Free Corps, who, in the guise of government troops, proceeded to mop up the revolution with bloody thoroughness. With the best will in the world, one could find nothing inspiring in the spectacle. As middle-class boys, who, moreover, had only just been roughly jolted out of a 4-year-long patriotic intoxication with war, we were naturally against the Red Revolutionaries, against Karl Liebknecht, Rosa Luxemburg, and their Spartacus League. Footnote: the Spartacus League was a left-wing faction of the Socialists, which later became the German Communist Party. Its leaders, Karl Liebknecht and Rosa Luxemburg, were murdered while under arrest in January 1919. Although we only vaguely knew that they would rob us of everything, probably liquidate those of our parents who were well off, and altogether make life frightful and Russian, we had thus to be in favour of Ebert and Noske and their Free Corps. Footnote: Friedrich Ebert had been the leader of the mainstream Social Democrats since before the First World War. Ebert became Chancellor in November 1918 and was the first President of the Weimar Republic. He died in 1925. But, alas, it was impossible to work up any enthusiasm for these figures. The spectacle they offered was too obviously repellent. The stench of treachery that clung to them was too pervasive. It was plain even to the nose of an 11-year-old boy. I reiterate that we should take note of the political reactions of children. What every child knows is generally the last irrefutable quintessence of a political development. There was something loathsome about the way the brutal, martial Free Corps, whom we would perhaps have liked to restore the Kaiser and Hindenburg, fought so emphatically for the government, that is, for Ebert and Noske, people who had obviously betrayed their own cause and who, incidentally, even looked like traitors. Footnote: Paul von Hindenburg was born in 1847. In the first year of the First World War, he returned from retirement to lead the German army in the East, and later became commander-in-chief. After the war, he came to symbolize the aristocratic pre-war world and was elected president after the death of Ebert in 1925. He remained in office until he died in 1934. What is more, as events impinged on us more closely, they became much more obscure and less intelligible than before, when they had taken place in distant France and had been placed in their proper perspective by the daily army bulletin. At times, one heard shots fired every day, but one rarely found out why. Some days there was no electricity, on others no trams, but it was never clear whether it was because of the Spartacists or the government that we had to use oil lamps or go on foot. Leaflets were thrust into one's hands, or one saw posters proclaiming, "The hour of reckoning is near." But to find out whether expressions such as "traitors," "murderers of the workers," or "unscrupulous demagogues" meant Ebert and Scheidemann, or Liebknecht and Eichhorn, one had to wade through paragraphs of vituperation and tangled denunciations. Footnote: Philipp Scheidemann was deputy leader of the Social Democrats. He proclaimed the German Republic on November 9, 1918. Emil Eichhorn was a member of the USPD, a party to the left of the Social Democrats and to the right of the Spartacus League, and president of the Berlin Police during the Revolution. Demonstrations were a daily event. A slogan would be shouted by one of the demonstrators, and the rest would yell "Hoch!" up, or "Nieder!" down, as the case may be. From afar one could only hear the chorus of "Hoch!" and "Nieder!" The solo voice that had provided the cue was inaudible, so one did not know what it was about. This went on, at intervals, for 6 months. Then it began to die down. By then it had long lost all meaning, for the fate of the revolution had been sealed, though naturally I did not know this at the time, when on December the 24th, 1918, after a victorious street battle in front of the palace, the workers and sailors dispersed and went home to celebrate Christmas. After the holidays, they were on the warpath again, but in the meantime the government had amassed their Free Corps in sufficient numbers. For 2 weeks there were no newspapers in Berlin, only gunfights near and far, and rumours. Then the newspapers appeared again. The government had won. Next day came the news that Karl Liebknecht and Rosa Luxemburg had been shot, both while attempting to escape. As far as I know, that was the origin of "shooting while attempting to escape," which has since become the conventional manner of dealing with political opponents east of the Rhine. At that time people were so unused to it that the words were taken literally and believed. Civilized times, indeed. After that, the revolution was doomed. But there was no respite. On the contrary, the fiercest street battles did not take place in Berlin until March 1919 and April in Munich, when it was only a matter of, so to speak, burying the corpse of the revolution. In Berlin they broke out when Noske disbanded the People's Naval Division, the original regiment of the revolution, formally and without ceremony. Its members refused to be disbanded and put up resistance, joined by workers from the northeast of Berlin. For a week the misguided masses, who could not understand how their government could lead their enemies against them, engaged in a desperate, hopeless, and bitter struggle. The outcome was certain from the start, and the vengeance of the victors was frightful. It is interesting to note that even then, in the spring of 1919, when the revolution of the left tried in vain to establish itself, the Nazi revolution was already fully formed and potent. It lacked only Hitler. The Free Corps, who had rescued Noske and Ebert, resembled the later Nazi stormtroopers, which most of them later joined. They certainly had the same outlook, behavior, and fighting methods. They had already invented the device of "shooting while attempting to escape," and had made significant advances in the science of torture. They also anticipated the events of June 30, 1934, with their bold habit of lining less important opponents up against the wall without many questions or distractions. Footnote: on June 30, 1934, the night of the Long Knives, Hitler, having summoned the leaders of the SA to a meeting in Bavaria, had them arrested and executed. On the same day many nationalist conservative leaders, among them the ex-chancellor Kurt von Schleicher, were also rounded up and killed. Ernst Röhm was shot the following day. All that was lacking was the theory to justify the practice. That would be provided by Hitler.